Okay. I have a few Bible verses I'd like some of the selected men to read. Keith, do you have 1 Peter 3:15 ready? Go ahead, please.
1 Peter 3:15 says, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence."
Be ready to give a defense for the hope that's within you with gentleness and reverence. So I like to select buzzwords. I'll tell you a quick story. I interviewed the 4-time grand champion world memory master when I was in training at Baylor downtown. And he said, how does he do all his memorization? He uses buzzwords. He uses meaningful, impactful, they really stand out in his mind how he memorizes. He can memorize like a deck of cards in a few minutes. He can memorize like all these weird, directions. But the point is the same. We have memory phrases. We have bold things that stand out in our mind to help load in our mind a greater topic. So I'd like us to emphasize that in our study. We'll cover a verse. It's kind of hard to memorize an entire verse. But if you can remember a buzzword or a buzz phrase in that verse that really stands out to you, it may help you remember that verse when you come into that difficult conversation over an error. And I think the buzzword in that one is be ready. Okay, we're going to be working on being ready. Alex, do you have Colossians 4:6? Season with salt. That's my buzzword for that one. I think we're going to get our seasoning ready. We're going to have our approach ready so that we'll know how to respond to each person. That's the goal of this class. And remember, these are commands. Commanded to be ready. Commanded to have our speech seasoned with salt so that we can address these errors. And Jamako, can you read James 5:20? He who turns a sinner, cover a multitude of sins. That's what we can do. We're pointing out, turn a sinner from the error. Okay. Error. When I was getting ready for this class, I felt like that was kind of a bold word. Oh, I'm telling you, you're in error. I am in a position to tell you you're in error. It's not me. It's the word that points out what's an error. I read the word. I didn't come up with this. It's God's perfect word. That's why when we pray, we thank him for his perfect word to show us what's the truth and what is error. So when we point out to folks what's an error, it's not from our own logic. It's got to be from the Bible verse. That's why I want to have the Bible verses ready. Okay, thank you. So we've got, those are three of many verses we could point to that we need to be ready. We need to be seasoned with salt. And our goal is to turn sinners from their error. Sometimes that sinner may even be us. So that's what we're going to endeavor to do. All right. Category one, erroneous attitudes towards religion. Category one, error one, there is no God. So there is no God. Have you ever been in a conversation when someone makes a claim like that, made a statement like that? I just got to say that is already a really hard conversation. That hurts a little bit. It's sad to hear someone say, to hear that that's the position they're at. But we can't get distracted by feeling sad about that and hearing that sort of that. This is an opportunity. If you hear someone says there is no God, they bothered to say that in your presence. And now that's an open door for you to present them a Bible verse. So they've made an affirmative claim. What category would this be under? Who would make a claim like this?
Atheist.
No theism, right? Against theism.
Evolutionists?
Sure. They may make that claim too, particularly towards the subject of God. This would be someone who is affirming that there is no God. Okay, not just they don't know, but they say, as far as there being a God or not, there is not. That's their like positive affirmative that there's that's not an option. So, Lord, praise God. Genesis 1:1 immediately addresses that. Here is where we get our that topic addressed at the very first verse of the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And my buzzword for that one is created. We can't help it. We are in conscious. We are perceiving the world. If you're alive, you know, I think, therefore I am, right? Now you wonder, where did it come from? How am I me? How did this even happen? You may look for an answer. The atheist would say, it's not God. Whatever it is, it's not God. But here's the first verse of the Bible saying, it is God. It's God as the answer for how things came to be. He created the heavens and the earth. So when someone responds with, it's not God, your Bible verse you can have ready is, He is the explanation. What's an atheist explanation? It's a number of different things. Big Bang Theory, for sure. Still a creation theory, but created by some other force other than not God. But they can explain what that force is, right? You need something before time. You need something beyond the power of the energy of the universe to create it. We'll get into that with Romans 1:20. Now, second verse I would use to respond, and Keith, you went right to that one when I brought up the subject. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen. To me, that's the buzzword. Clearly seen. Being understood through what has been made so that they are without excuse. It's clear. You can try to delude yourself, confuse yourself, ignore it. But it's clear that there is a force beyond the natural forces that creates things. Yes, sir?
Those that claim
you know, it's clear to them it seems intelligent. It's clear to them it sees design, but they're not going all the way to recognizing it's the divine being proclaimed in the Bible that's the being. And that just reinforces the idea that it is clear. All right, I'd like to present why I think it's clear. I like the five-finger idea. Something from nothing. In order for you to get anything to happen, something has to proceed for that to happen. That's what we observe in our in your day-to-day. From the moment you were born to up to this point, everything that's happened has had a preceding event, and it's had an adequate cause to effect. That sort of law that affects the universe, that's everything we've seen. But in order to get the universe in the first place, what sort of preceding event what is necessary to begin a universe? You need to get something. You need something before that. You could go to an infinite regress, but you arrive at infinity. You arrive at eternity. You have something beyond this entropy of the world decaying, the finite point of matter beginning. Before that, you come to something beyond time. Something unlimited in power relative to what is in the universe. May not tell you too much about morals at this point in the conversation, but it's at least pointing to what's evident to us. There is a greater power than what we are observing in the universe. No one's seeing universe just pop it out of nowhere or planets out of nowhere. We have to go with what we observe. So that's one, something from nothing. Second, fine tuning. You've got a Big Bang. That's maybe the atheist idea. What order is that going to create? what bang, we just don't observe that. It's a dishonest argument to say that that is going to fine-tune gravity, electrical, all the forces that are at place in this universe to permit all the things to happen in the order they do. So that's speaking a little bit more to his divine nature and his invisible attributes. What do you clearly see the universe doing? It is ordered. It's structured. It has defined ways that it operates. That what God is telling, we see indications about the creative power by looking at the creation itself. So something from nothing, fine tuning, life. The fact that there is life, Big Bang moving towards life, or some inexplicable force moving towards life. I did biology. I like to follow up with where they're trying to move forward in the frontiers of science. And as much the scientists are trying to make life happen, now remember, they're living already. They have all the chemicals and the idea already. They can't get it started. It is so exquisitely finely detailed down to the how small, how sophisticated the design is of life. That is another thing I would like to present speaks to the attributes of the divine creator, how attentive he is to detail, how capable he is to create such a thing, such an amazing concept of life. Remember, starts with nothing, no laws, no cause and effect, not even any of those principles that govern the universe. There was nothing before the universe created except for God and said, I will make a universe that will that will operate under these conditions. And they're his signature. They speak to his invisible attributes, his divine nature. So life. Another thing, here's one of my favorite ones, consciousness. Atheism often goes hand in hand with materialism. There's nothing beyond the material. You need a material, physical, definable, height, width, length, width, depth, time, matter related power to have anything effect in the universe. Those are material things. But consciousness is an immaterial. It is an immaterial level of reality, being conscious. What is the substance of consciousness? We are all conscious and thinking right now. We're living a reality and experience, a personal experience and consciousness arriving from matter, from dust, from just gravity, that takes you into an immaterial level of reality that a materialist cannot explain. But we cannot deny it. We cannot deny that we think, therefore we are. We are in a state of consciousness right now. That speaks to his creative power too. It's telling of the force that creates the universe that his nature, his attributes, his divinity is geared towards consciousness. And then we being humans and we being conscious, the fifth, so we had something from nothing, fine-tuning, life, consciousness, final, morality. Morality, arriving from a big bang and you get moral truths. We can't help but feel wronged when someone wrongs us. We can train ourselves on how we react, but we still acknowledge a wrongdoing. Why? Why do we perceive of right and wrong? What is it about it? Why does it have to be that way? That's the other. That is what's tells us even more that there is a God who is capable of creating, fine tuning, causing life to happen, creating consciousness and morality. So, I know I went off on a tangent there on that verse, but that, to me, speaks to his invisible attributes, divine nature, and his eternal power. Yes, sir?
I'd like to just add a little bit to your consciousness and your morale. I believe those two go hand in hand.
Yes, sir.
So, with consciousness and morale, you're looking at what's right, what's wrong, and you're aware consciously about what's going on around you.
Right. Yeah, they do kind of all hinge on it. In the life, you have to have the life to have the consciousness to have the morality. And you got to have the fine tuning to allow life to exist. And you need the matter in the first place, right? So, yeah, they do all hinge on each other. And those are things that everyone observes who's a human, conscious, and a moral operating agent is going to be observing these aspects of creation. And we can offer to an atheist who speaks to there is no God, at least acknowledge that these things are telling about the power, whatever they think it may be. It's telling of the nature of that power. And we'll find out more as we read into the Bible. We'll find out more about the divine being God. Final verse, so we can wrap up error one. Psalm 14:1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. Corrupt. They have committed abominable deeds. There is no one who does good. So there's the claim. It's even mentioned in the Bible. The fool is the one who claims there is no God. So what springs forth from that idea is corruption, abominable deeds, no one who does good. So with this faulty logic, this observation of the divine attributes of God, and then coming to the false conclusion, there is no God, that is a corrupt conclusion. That corrupts the decision making that will amount to abominable deeds. So those would be my three verse responses of probably many others I could put together, but those three at least. Alex?
You might get a negative response from somebody if you read in Psalms 14:1.
Right.
I usually sometimes take it to Psalms 19:1, where it says the heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expansion declaring the works of his hand.
Right. Psalm 19:1. That would be one that I think would go with Romans 1:20. It's the same idea. And that's good. You know, I appreciate you respond. I want that feedback. If I come at them like that, they may, I don't know if that's seasoned with salt. I think at least the word, the verse itself is the truth. It may be good for them to hear. If they hear that this is a foolish way, they say, oh, no one's ever told me that's foolish before. I've actually always just heard that makes me smart to say I've got atheist path. And you never know. Actually, I think we can trust the word that if we bring that, it may rub them the wrong way at first. They go home and they think about it, you know. But I appreciate the feedback about that. We've got to try to gauge our conversations. You know, is our audience, is our friend in a position to receive that verse? You don't have to come with Psalm 14:1. If y'all get in a conversation and someone is proposing there is no God, you don't have to use these verses. I'm just saying, I think these verses are verses I would like to have ready on my mind that I can say, here's what the Bible says about it.
What buzzwords is Alex want on that verse?
Oh, good question. When we present a verse that we think is applicable to the error, it's hard to memorize the whole verse. Let's pick a buzzword, and it'll help load the whole verse when we're trying to remember in a conversation. What buzzword would you like out of that verse?
Fool.
Oh, the one that you proposed, Psalm 19:1.
Glory, the glory of God.
Glory. All right. I like that. Good.
Josh.
Yes, ma'am.
In Psalms 19, verse 6 addresses the part that you were talking about, nature and everything. Verse 6 says that... ask the beasts, the birds, let them tell you, speak to the earth, and let it teach you. Let the fish of the sea declare it to you. Who among all these does not know there is a God?
Thank you. The know. Who among these do not know that there's a God? We should be able to know it.
Verse 6 talks about the animal kingdom, and so much in evolution, you can look. Some of the intricate things that only one little animal has.
Right.
To declare that it's not evolution, it's God.
I agree. And you look at those animals, you see that what they tell us about God, His creative power, His majesty in His creation. That's As we as Christians, it's such a blessing to get to look at the creation and just get to revel in the awesomeness of our God and His creation. And I want to invite these atheists into that state of mind, that faith, so they can enjoy looking at the world and speaking to their Creator too. I think that's a good segue to error number two. Agreed? Error number two. You cannot know there is a God. It kind of falls through. These will kind of build on each other, right? These errors and our responses. Back in Romans 1, 21 and 22, the same thought continues. For even though they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations. And their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. So this error, you cannot know there is a God. Who might say, someone who espouses a kind of belief might say, you cannot know there is a God.
Agnostic.
Thank you. Agnostic. Is again like the atheist, no God. This is no, cannot, you know, without, and then knowing, Gnostic, Gnosis, knowing, you cannot know. There is no knowing. But here we have the verse, Romans 1, 21, 22, and there's several other verses. You can know. You can know. And we should be able to arrive at the conclusion, I know that there is a God. We may not be able to arrive at all His morals and all His particular ways He wants us to conduct ourselves in all walks of life. But knowing about there being a divine power that has order, that has purpose, His capabilities, we can know at least that by observing what's around us.
God,
yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's clearly seen. And that was my...
So that they are...
Without excuse.
So evident.
Right. People can be so deluded by whatever education they're getting, whatever they want to direct their minds towards. Let's say someone says, I want to go learn all I can about evolution or the Big Bang. I'm really into that. This is them saying, that's the heart getting darkened. Saying, I'm giving into that idea. I could go the way of believing in God and coming to know more about God and what He has to say. I see that all this creation speaks to there being God. Now comes the choice. And they choose, I'm going down the other path. I'll admit to y'all, when I was young, when I was, you know, teenager, going through my biology degree, I started to entertain those thoughts more. And I was not a Christian. But thanks be to God, He gave me patience and gave me the opportunity to come out of that sinful way of thinking. I hope that happens to more people, more young people. And I hope we can do that for them. I hope we can help them realize that. And that's the purpose of this class, to be ready to help people come out of that deluded way of thinking.
Josh?
Yes, ma'am. I want to focus on something you said in your question. How do you get, you asked me, how do I get them to? I don't. It's the word. It's through the marrow. It's into the heart. It's the pricking of the word that in their soul. They have to receive the word, think about it, and realize that there is a truth and they've been going the wrong way. What do? We wield the sword. We bring the word. That's the best we can do. And we can trust that, I mean, everyone who's a Christian in here, that's what the word did for you. And the word can do that for the other folks too. Where I don't want to say we're on the hook for making people convert. We don't have that power, but we are on the hook for bringing, for wielding the sword, for bringing them that word. And that's why we're getting prepared to do that. Yes, sir.
In all
Right.
We go in with every conversation thinking that we're going to be successful, and then we're going to become kind of dismayed at times.
Mm-hmm.
So all we can do is one step and then another, and it's just being full of resistance.
Right.
You just have to say, okay, that's just the way it is.
Right. And it depends what you define as success. It's a success to see a sinner turn from their errors. But I want to grant you, it is a success to at least be bringing the word before them and let that word get in them. We water it, right? We can plant or water or promote and support, encourage and direct. But it's got to happen in their soul. But it's good. Yeah, we've probably all been discouraged at some point when we've talked to someone about our faith, and then they just, you know, kind of blow past it or don't want to talk about it. I wouldn't say that's not a failure. Don't get discouraged. Try not to get discouraged. It is a discouraging thing to hear, see someone reject the faith, but. You know, God's the wind in your sails. He's pushing you forward to keep doing that. We are His workmanship. Let's be busy doing bringing this word. Keep it up. Don't be discouraged. We've all got to keep trying. All right. Isaiah 40:21. Do you not know? Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? There is a God. There is a creator. His power, all his majestic creation, all of his order. I bring this verse and the buzzword particular. Do you not know? A rhetorical question of saying, of course, you should know. You can know that you can know a lot about God, the creative power, by observing his nature. And we've looked at some other verses that. His divine nature, his invisible aspect is seen by what's been made. And then Psalm 19, particulars about the creation that speak to him. Yes, sir, Alex.
What's amazing about Isaiah 40, if you go to the next verse, verse 22, it explains that the earth is round. So, you know, the Bible actually is consistent with scientific facts when you look at it.
Right.
You look at Isaiah, you also look at Proverbs 8:27. You can look at Job 26:7, that God hangs the earth on nothing, the earth is in orbit. Everything that scientists go out there and discover, it's already been in the Bible for, you know, thousands of years.
Right. Yeah. From my point of view, it's like, of course it is. It's from the Creator Himself. And again, even just the movement of the planets and their order, it speaks to his power. It speaks to the grandness of his power that he can set solar systems and galaxies in motion compared to how small we are. We're so fortunate to be able to come to know that and reflect on that. And we just got to wish and do our best to help people come to that wonderful position we're in as Christians. Yes, Lisa. Yeah. Good point.
I put it down Isaiah 53 because it would be really hard for someone to refute that Jesus did exist, he did come to earth. So if they read the prophecy of Isaiah 53 and see it be fulfilled in the New Testament, that's giving weight to the accuracy of the Bible, that it is not just a fairy tale, that it is a historical record.
Totally. Absolutely. And I have that. So, you know, as we're presenting these arguments, eventually you may present this, they're thinking about it. You present the answer to the next, they're thinking about it. And then they're like, wait a minute, you keep quoting the Bible. Why is the Bible, why should I believe that? And so we get to that in, Error 7. The Bible cannot be trusted. No problem. But no, that, of course, and that may come up immediately. You may say just, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, you're quoting the Bible. And so you may shift right into the next error. Basically, they presented to you a new error that the Bible cannot be trusted. And actually, I think I have Isaiah 53 on there for the Dead Sea Scrolls. And then I have John 18 from from P52, the oldest, you know, manuscript that we have, extant manuscript. So we're going to get to that. But good point. And you've probably dealt with that conversation before. It's likely many of y'all have. You're presenting Bible verses, and then someone responds, "Why should I trust the Bible?" Let's get to that. And number seven, we'll talk about here's why you can trust the Bible. Take some diligence to understand, why do you trust the Bible? Why do you think that it is actually what the apostles said? Why do you think those stories in the Old Testament are true? You're pretty sure they're true. You can be very confident. You can stake all your life, your purpose on that. And we want to be able to explain to people, like, be ready to give a defense, why we've staked our whole life on that. So I'm going to cover a few Bible verses, I think, deal with those. But it takes a lot of diligence to be ready to go into depth with them about why you believe that. How are we doing, Neil? Done? Done? Yeah. Okay. So that's good. We covered two errors in the intro and had great comments. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. And hopefully people got to take some notes. And we're going to get even more feedback and input from the class as the assembly moves forward, especially on Wednesday nights. I know people like to talk more on Wednesday nights than Sunday mornings. So, all right. Any other questions? Okay.